This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 288 of The Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. We have our opening shifts to get into following the Bruins overtime win over the Montreal Canadiens. But first, there's a couple of items we have to hit right off the bat. Number one, I don't think any one of us are in great shape today. Personally, it's because I'm going through the classic. Didn't get sick once throughout the winter, but now that the weather's getting warm, now I'm sick. I don't want to call this my flu game. That's a bit dramatic, Ryan. But so I have that going on my end. Meanwhile, north of the border, Bridget and Scott. Holy smokes, have I seen some pictures this past days? Why don't I throw it over to you two to talk to me and the listeners about your trip up north?
It's been a very nice, relaxing, calm couple days.
It's the first time I've been sitting in my hotel room just not doing, like, we've been around town.
Yeah, it's been great though. Like, Montreal, great city. Good crowd at the game last night, even though it wasn't the most exciting game for most of it, which we'll get into. But yeah, we met some cool people, went to some cool bars.
A couple beer towers, maybe?
Yeah, one beer tower, which was, I gotta say, for two people was a little aggressive, but
I thought we could have done two.
I think that's extremely wishful thinking.
I just want to say I may or may not have seen a picture of Scott with his behind an empty beer tower with his head just in his arms on the table. And listen, I don't think anybody listening could blame, because like you said, that's quite a lot for two people. But it wasn't just a Bruins Canadiens trip. It's also Scott's birthday today, so. Little round of applause, and there it is.
For the record, this was just for the photo. I was not actually passed it.
He goes, send this to Brian.
Okay, well, I'm glad you clarified that, because if that was real, I wouldn't have blamed you. I mean, that's a lot.
No, because then here he is at the next bar, looking happy as hell. Like, he's just
okay.
That's he's right. Wearing the birthday crown.
Yeah,
that
with
I
my
in.
Birthday crown.
He's wearing the birthday crown I snuck in. He had no idea that I was about to be like, hey, here's your birthday crown. And he wore it. And I had to wait for him to get to the right level of buzzed for him to throw that on.
Now, how was the drive up? Did you two scratch and claw at each other? Like, we try to throw each other out the window? What happened?
Scott, was I bad?
I mean, I did leave her at Hill Farmstead. We stopped at the brewery and you know, but I felt bad. I got a little ways down the road and I was like, yeah, I guess I should probably take her.
Was Bridget practicing her play by play with like street signs? And there's an exit sign and there's a gas station right there on a third circle.
I only made him listen to two Shakira songs, just two.
That's not bad. Any Harry Styles?
Yeah. Oh, a lot of Harry Styles.
There was lots of Harry Styles.
But he doesn't mind Harry Styles, so.
No, I do like hairstyles. Lots of Taylor Swift, which I also don't mind. So,
a lot of Taylor Swift.
Good poutine. Any poutine?
Yes. Great poutine. Scott had breakfast poutine yesterday.
Yeah, that was an excellent choice.
Well, you guys are still up there right now, so the trip's not completely over. So you can, you know, maybe do one or two more things before you head home.
Yeah, get Scott drunk again, right?
I don't think so. I think that's enough for a couple days.
All right. Well, Scott, as I mentioned, it is your birthday, so happy birthday. And because of that, we'll have you start off with the opening shifts today. How's that?
Sure. So I thought one of the more interesting storylines from this game was Andrew Peak's Bruins debut. And I thought he played really well. I thought that was a very encouraging first step for him. Played just over 17 minutes, had a couple hits, a couple blocks. I thought there were some shifts where, you know, he did a good job defending the net front, which we've talked about is, you know, is going to be key. Like, it should be a strength of his game. All the analytics would tell you in Columbus that it wasn't. So got to get that straightened out. But yeah, first game, no issues, like really nothing to complain about. I thought he was involved offensively a couple times, had a couple nice keep-ins, you know, simple puck movement in transition, nothing flashy, obviously, which, you know, that's his game. Like, it's going to be simplified. But yeah, Jim Montgomery had pretty high praise for him after the game. So good first step. And obviously it's, you know, there's only 14 games left in the regular season, so that's not a lot of time to get him up to speed in the Bruins system and figure out, you know, is he going to be an everyday player come the playoffs, or is he a rotational depth piece? I think if he plays like last night, he's probably an everyday player, but, you know, now let's see if he can keep that going moving forward.
Yeah, no, I thought he looked very solid back there. We'll get into that more later. So my opening shift is, it was Beecher's first game back. It was just over 2 months since he had played for the Bruins. He'd been down in Providence. And so he's centering the fourth line last night and thought he did a good job. He did a great job on his faceoffs, which is his strength and something that he can bring to the team. It's always funny when you talk to the players and they're like, it almost sounds like sometimes they're like, it's a thesis, like what they're trying to like give us an essay about, like, okay, this is what I can bring. Like after the game, before the game, Beecher was talking about, like, yeah, I can do this. I can bring the faceoffs. I can be physical. And he was right. He did that. He played some key penalty killing minutes. He started, like, he took a faceoff in overtime. He didn't win that one, but they were using him in high leverage situations because he, you know, they trust him defensively and with his faceoff. So I thought it was nice to see him back. I thought he played well. I think, you know, we can discuss what maybe the optimal fourth line might be come playoff time. But as of Montreal, it was a little bit of a boring game at different points, but Beecher, I thought, was a positive.
Yeah, a lot to talk about there, and you're kind of learning that there is some depth. Well, yeah, I guess we already knew that, but there is depth on this Bruins roster up front. Although all the time it was just kind of maybe a lack of that one extra high-end player. But speaking of potential high-end players, so 7 points in his last six games, overtime winner last night. So Jake DeBrusk, the points are following him now, and just another reminder that, again, the history shows, the analytics show that when Jake DeBrusk is scoring, that the Bruins are highly successful, and that's not going to be any different in the spring. It's the biggest reason why all along in the beginning of the first half plus of the season, and even as recent as a month ago, he's very polarizing when he's not scoring. And when he's not scoring, you have a lot of people who are defending him, and understandably so, that the play is still there, but the points aren't there. But unfortunately for him, because of where he is in this lineup and because of his ceiling, if the points aren't there, and the Bruins aren't winning, it's easy to look at him and say that's a reason why. Like, he's capable of scoring at a high level. So when you're not, even when you're playing well, you're going to draw criticism, and I think his streakiness doesn't help him over the years. That said, he's integral to them when he's scoring, and this last week plus has been a reminder of that. And as we get closer to the playoffs, he's imperative, especially because he's still on this team.
Yeah, we talked to him after the game, and he, you know, he was asked about, like, basically his play since the deadline and now being a week past that. And he said, like, well, I've been through it before, but also, like, yeah, of course, you just feel better, more comfortable once you get past that and you know, okay, this is where I am, at least the rest of the season. Like, obviously, there's still questions about his next contract and free agency and where all that ends up, but he knows he's here through the end of this season. So I do think, you know, I think he was starting to pick it up even a little bit before the deadline, but especially since the deadline, you see him kind of playing with a little, you know, weight off his shoulders. And I think you can say the same about Linus Ullmark, who, by the way, had a second straight really good outing post-deadline. Obviously sat against Pittsburgh and now Thursday in Montreal. There's some developments on goaltending that I want to get into in a little bit, but, you know, we can keep it to our opening shift guys for now.
Yeah, because Scott was questioning Monty pregame about – there's a few reporters around that were, like, really trying to sniff out the real answer for what they genuinely consider a goalie rotation in the playoffs. We'll get to that after we kind of touch on the opening shifts, right, though, because that's another interesting conversation. But I think, Brian, the DeBrusk opening shift is a good one because – It was a theme, you know, like guys playing a little bit more confidently now that they know they're here, right? Like Ullmark playing great. DeBrusk looking like he's playing more to his ceiling than he had been when he was going through, you know, a drought. And he joked about it after the game. Someone asked him first question about, like, you know, do you feel more comfortable now that deadline's passed and you're still here? And he's like, well, I've been through it before. Because he has. And at the end of the day, both of them are happy that nothing went through, that they're both still here. And Montgomery talked about it after the game too. He's like, in particular, we think those guys are very valuable to us, basically saying, like, I don't think what the return would have been would have helped the team. So it was nice. It's kind of funny. Is that the first time we've been able to talk to DeBrusk since the trade deadline?
No, he talked one other time. I think either a morning skate or practice.
It felt like he was all of a sudden realizing, like, oh yeah, crap, that's right. That was a week ago and still haven't really talked too much about it. But yeah, and he obviously scored the game winner. Good setup. I don't know, he was playing good.
Yeah, and he was hunting pucks last night too on the Nesson broadcast after the I think it was the second period, maybe the first, but Razor and Sophia, and I think it was it Billy? They were, or maybe it was Barry. I don't remember, but they were highlighting some of his shifts. And he was just hunting pucks, and ultimately he does get the game winner in a 3-on-3 format. But yeah, it's just, I just don't think it's any secret. I think there's no doubt he's a polarizing player. There's a lot of people that don't like him because maybe they think he's softer or inconsistent or doesn't score, but there's a lot of people that love him. And I think that when somebody's polarizing, it's because everybody universally has expectations for a player. And yeah, it's just great to see him scoring and playing well additionally to that. So they're going to need him. He's definitely an important player. And I don't know if you had any follow-up thoughts on DeBrusk. It's just kind of an obvious take, right? But again, when he's scoring, it's worth mentioning down the stretch here.
Yeah, and he needs to be on top of his game for that. I'm going to call it the first line, him, Coyle, Marchand. I think really you could probably flip the top two lines, call them whatever you want. But you know, Coyle's been a little quieter offensively recently. I don't think he's been playing poorly. Marchand had a little bit of a slump that he's pulled out of. He's put up some points recently, but yeah, like the Bruins just aren't deep enough in the top six in terms of high end talent to really have anyone in there slumping. Like they kind of need everyone to pretty much be on their game. So, you know, DeBrusk is streaky, but obviously he's hot right now and you hope that carries into the playoffs. You know, that second line, I like the way Heinen's played with Zacha and Pasternak. That's not, you know, you wouldn't look at that normally and be like, oh, Danton Heinen, you know, yeah, sure, second line, right? Bruins tried that back in 2019, and it, you know, well, him and like eight other guys, but no one ever clicked there. You know, I'd asked Montgomery about that before yesterday's game, and he said he likes the defensive responsibility Heinen brings to that line. He thinks he's helped them win pucks back, but they did need a little more offense. And sure enough, lo and behold, there you go. They scored the game's first goal. Zacha sets up a Pasternak one-timer, and then Heinen does a great job getting the rebound and putting it back while getting knocked to the ice. So, you know, there's the more offense that they're looking for.
That was like a slow-mo. That was the most slow-mo goal ever. He's like falling slowly, just trying to get the stick on it, and he knocked it in. He's been good too. And people were talking about like, okay, maybe it's time to extend Heinen. Like you like him. Like you only have him for a year right now, so maybe extend him. And he's been a great addition as, I'll call him a walk-on, because he was just there on a tryout, and then he made the team and he's done well, and now he's playing with David Pasternak, who saw that coming. Yeah. So yeah, that line actually has been playing pretty well.
Maybe who knows, maybe Mark Wahlberg can play Danton Heinen in an Invincible 2 hockey edition or something like that, who knows. But yeah, it's interesting, because you're right, Scott, like in theory you think to yourself, Heinen on that line, it feels like it's not an optimal line from a talent standpoint. But at the same time, all year we've accepted Zacha and Pasternak and JVR if they were a combination. And, you know, at JVR and Heinen's respective stages in their careers, I wouldn't say one is significantly better than the other necessarily. So why were we okay with JVR, but Heinen, it seems weird? I think it's because historically JVR is a proven scorer in the league, and has played top 6 minutes in both Philly and Toronto. But, like, if you look at their current skill sets, I think Heinen, foot speed-wise, like, keeps up with Zacha and Pasternak's game a little bit better. And yeah, there's defensive efficiencies that Heinen brings that helps them as well. So I wanted to ask you guys about that line. And Scott, you bring it up. Like, I again, because this team doesn't have a bunch of rock stars on it, they have a couple, right? But, like, not enough to have two top lines full of them. My point is, the trade deadline's come and gone. We know that they're not going to bring in another top 6 forward externally. It kind of is what it is, and they're going to be a high end forward short. We already knew that about them. So if that's this line, and Pasternak's all world play can make up for a little bit of Heinen not being a true bona fide top 6 scorer, but he brings other assets to that line. If they keep playing like this, I don't necessarily want to see a change. I don't know if there's a combination you guys are dying to see other than them right now with Pasternak.
No, I think it's working pretty well. Really almost every line. So yeah, for once they actually have some consistency from game to game. Obviously Van Riemsdyk was out Thursday because he was sick. So that threw, you know, a wrench into the lines for Thursday night. But yeah, I think those all four lines have looked pretty good, so you might as well ride it. Like, you want to have it. We know things are going to change in the playoffs, whether it's in game or game to game, but you want to have sort of like a base foundational lineup that, all right, these changes aren't working, let's go back to the thing that, like, that everyone's comfortable with. You want to at least have that, even if you make switches to get away from it. And it feels like this lineup that they've had now for several games of Marchand, Coyle, DeBrusk, Heinen, Zacha, Pasternak, Van Riemsdyk, Geeky, Frederick, and then I know we're going to get more into the fourth line to build off Bridges opening shift, but really any combination they've had there has done pretty well recently, with Bogvist, Brizzo, Lauko, Beecher jumping in with a good game. So it feels like that's going to be, you know, that's the safety net. Like, this is the lineup that I think Montgomery will come back to when, you know, we'll probably start the playoffs with. And then even if there's changes, you can come back to this as sort of everyone's comfort zone.
Yeah, I think this has become like the obvious lineup, like you said, besides the like JVR probably factors in back on the third line. Brazo was elevated for the Montreal game because JVR was out. But so did you want to go to what I said, like the optimal fourth line? Because it's interesting. We were having this conversation at the bar last night. Like, where does Maroon fit in? Like, where does Pat Maroon, like, who do you take out for a Pat Maroon fourth spot? Basically, where does he slot in? Also, we can kind of give our latest update on whether or not, like, he'll be ready in time for the playoffs, because there's some troubling signs about his health that have come up. I think, Scott, you might have mentioned this last episode as well, but he did not travel to Montreal. He has not been skating either. So we can talk about, you know, who you'd want to see on the fourth line, if it includes him or not. So I don't know who wants to start with their thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll just give my two cents quickly. I think that if Maroon was healthy and playing at a reasonable level, I do think that he would be in the lineup game one of the playoffs, despite not having a ton of games with the team. I think that when you have three Stanley Cups to your name in recent years, and you are capable of scoring at the NHL level, along with not allowing anybody to bully or take advantage of your superstars, you're going to put that guy in a lineup. He gets the benefit of the doubt if he's healthy. Whether or not one agrees with me on that, that's totally subjective and fine. But I do think if you're the Bruins and you're Jim Montgomery, especially if you're playing, you know, Toronto in the first round with Ryan Reeves and others running around, or Florida at some point in the second round, or Carolina, like, you're going to, I just think that they're going to want him in that lineup if he can stay healthy and can prove to not be a detriment in between the boards. And I think maybe the casualty is Lauko on the left side, or they just kind of rotate guys in and out to make sure Maroon stays in, or if Maroon's not playing great, they just kind of rotate everybody. But I do think if Maroon comes back at some point before the regular season ends, plays a couple games and looks, you know, decent enough, I do think that they'll give him the benefit of the doubt in game one.
Yeah, it's fascinating because Bruins got him, and the timeline, you know, based on reports, was 2 to 3 weeks, you know, probably by the end of March. Well, obviously, I don't know if there was a setback or maybe just the Bruins evaluated the situation differently, but he was skating. Now he's not. Like, that's not especially encouraging. So now you wonder, you know, there hasn't been any sort of update. No one's saying anything, but you wonder, like, has that timeline changed? And, you know, is his return now looking at some point in April? Because you are going to want to get him into games. You know, he's been around. I'm not really worried about him adjusting to systems or anything. He's probably played just about every system there is. But, you know, chemistry with line mates, and just to see how he looks. You know, back surgery is not nothing, not when you're in your mid 30s. Like, that's, you're gonna have to see it first. So yeah, and it's tough because, again, everyone else has been playing well. Like, Bogfist playing well, Lauko's had, you know, went a kind of a long stretch where he was the odd man out, but I think he's had good jumps since he came back in. I think Brazo is still playing well. When he's on the fourth line, I didn't think he, I thought that third line in general last night kind of had a tough game. They're very quiet, and, you know, not all his fault, but there wasn't really much there that where you were like, oh, wow, he can play on the third line too. Like, now he's probably playing on the fourth line or not playing. And then if Beecher plays like that, like he did on Thursday night, it's hard to keep him out too, because what he brings on faceoffs is so valuable for a team that's struggled on faceoffs. I mean, for him to come right back in first game in a, you know, a couple months and win 8 out of 11, like, yeah, Bridget, you mentioned, you know, Montgomery throwing him out there key situations late. And it's like, yeah, well, like, what have we been talking about with this team about how they can't win faceoffs and, you know, key situations late?
And then that's why they don't close out games. And then yeah. you bring him in and he's winning key faceoffs. And I know it wasn't directly in the line, in this line of play, but like then they close out the game, they win in overtime. So yeah, it could be a missing piece. Like it really could. And as long as he's looking like he's made some improvements since 2 months ago when they sent him down to Providence, he's a good option to have there. And obviously he's hoping he sticks and he can stay and carve out the role that he started the season with. So I see that honestly, like if we're being real about it, it's probably going to be a rotating fourth line from now until probably through the playoffs, because each guy brings something a little bit different. Maybe it's matchup dependent. Maybe it's this guy had a bad game, we get someone else in. This guy has had a good game, we're going to keep him where he is, you know, just completely based off of their own performances at the time. But Beach is a good piece to have. If you're seeing that faceoffs are, you know, biting you, or if you want to get ahead of it and you're like, no, we're going to start with him as our fourth line center because we trust him more in these key roles for faceoffs. But my opinion about Pat Maroon and where he would fit would be first, if he's healthy, obviously, fully healthy, because you can't have like a 80% healthy Pat Maroon. It might turn around and to bite you, because he's already not the fastest. And, you know, if he's even slower because of the back issue, and also you don't want him to have any sort of tweak re-injury if he's not fully ready to go. But I think I agree with you, Brian. Lauko seems like the one that he might factor in for. I know people probably would say Brazo, but Brazo has been playing his role really well, and is a little bit different skill set than Maroon. Like if we're looking at like more redundancy, like who is more similar, I feel like maybe Lauko is much faster, but Maroon and Lauko would probably be more of a comp than Brazo and Maroon. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
I think it would be Maroon and Brazo. I think they'd be the two that are more similar. And I've mentioned it before, but I would also question the foot speed of a line with Maroon and Brazo as the two wings.
Yeah.
So that would have to be consideration too. Since I didn't give my ideal line, I guess a combination I would like to see, but I just don't know if they're going to have time, is Maroon, Beecher, Boqvist. Like I think Boqvist has been playing well, so I want him in. I would like the foot speed of that line. It would mean either Maroon or Boqvist flips to the right wing to their offside. I don't know if Beecher could do that too, but you'd have to figure out like how it lines up. But like that combination would intrigue me. Obviously, it's just not something we've seen, and you don't know when you're going to see it. So, yeah, not that like Brazo deserves to come out of the lineup or anything. I don't think he does, but I'd probably want a little more foot speed than you'd get from a Maroon Brazo line.
Yes, and that's a fair point to make, though I would argue if you're matching up against other teams' top lines, other teams' bottom lines, hopefully it's not as big of a contrast. But I also think there's the positive to that is that's a really heavy line. And if you get down low in the offensive zone, no one's taking the puck off you. No one's out muscling you in front of the net. So it's completely fair to bring up the lack of foot speed. And that would be a risk and a potential concern. And I think it'd be matchup dependent too. The combo you just mentioned, Scott, I think is interesting as well. They got options.
You wouldn't have a chance to see it in the regular season more than likely, like, or maybe only for like two games in the regular season. No. Like it seems like, cause we're only a month and a day away from the Bruins' last regular season game, which is April 16th. So not a lot of time when Maroon gets back. If he gets back before the playoffs, to plug him in and see what works best. Like you're just going to kind of have to find out on the fly.
You know, I could also see, like, here's the thing about Lauko, and he's played really well, and his foot speed definitely, he closes it on opponents on the back check with back pressure. He gets in their face in the forecheck. That's like, those are all things you love to see. But from an offensive standpoint, he's just not going to bring you much. And again, I don't want to ignore the back surgery to Maroon, but let's just say Maroon was completely healthy. You could see Maroon going into the lineup and scoring 2 or 3 goals in like 4 or 5 games, just because he can score at the NHL level and he can get dirty. Like Lauko, you can't even see him doing that. And I also think that there's defensive weaknesses with Lauko. He's a bit of a riverboat gambler at times. Is that something that Jack likes to say? Where he just sometimes he's too fast for his own good. He's too much of an ankle biter for his own good. Sometimes he gets caught running around. And while I love the energy and the effort, sometimes that can lead to, you know, breakdowns in coverage and whatnot. And I just think that if you have a fourth line with, you know, Maroon and Boquist and Brazo, or Maroon and Beecher and Brazo, or whatever, maybe the combination Scott said, I just think it limits potential risk defensively.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys had any other thoughts, but I was going to maybe transition to peak in the defense and see if you guys have any evolving opinions about how maybe what like the best defensive lineup is. Cause we've seen a few different combinations. We saw, Shattenkirk get rotated out. Obviously Grizzlick was sick, so he missed Thursday's game. So you got Lauri moving up to play with McAvoy. Weatherspoon comes back in. Peak makes his debut. So again, another place where it's like, hey, it's great to have all these options, but at some point they are going to have to, you know, figure out exactly what their best six looks like.
Well, I think Weatherspoon's going to take home a Norris in the next couple of years. That's just my opinion. But I'm just kidding. I don't want people to take me too seriously there. But I don't want him coming out of the lineup. I thought he was great last night in Montreal, and I think he's been a really good player since they called him up, honestly. And that third pair of Weatherspoon and Peak, I just think that kind of, not that Shattenkirk can't be doing the same thing out there because he's a good veteran, but Peak and Weatherspoon, they do exactly what you want a third pair to do, and that's make their opponents earn every inch of ice, be strong in front of their net, physical. And I think Peak plays such a simple game. I don't think it's going to be difficult for him to come to a new system, a more structured system, and kind of flourish. I'm not really worried about a defensive-minded, big-body defenseman not being able to do those things. I really do think being in Columbus, and I know compared to his other Columbus teammates, his analytics were not great. I just think that it was a bad situation for him. And I don't know about you guys, but I really like Weatherspoon on that third D pair. So, you know, I don't want him leaving. So if Peak has to rotate out with Shattenkirk or whatever, that's fine. But I don't want Weatherspoon leaving that third D pair. And as far as the top four, I think I mentioned it last episode. I just think Lauri plays a lot better when he's playing with like-minded, like skill-setted individuals like McAvoy or anybody in that top four. I think he needs to be in the top four to really get the best out of him. Whether or not he's ready for that role or not, I don't know. But I think you get the best out of him when he's in that role.
Yeah, it was funny. We got a chance to talk to Peak before the game, and you could just see how refreshed he was, like how happy he was for the change of scenery. Just you got that whole vibe about him. Like, I'm actually somewhere I can play. I can, because he wasn't getting a lot of ice time. And now, you know, now he's hoping him and Weatherspoon can be a reliable pair that you use a lot. And I think that the small sample size, just the one game so far, was very promising, that could be a very useful pair. I think Shattenkirk hadn't been playing well. So I thought, and we at the end of last podcast said probably time to switch out both, like switch the bottom pair up completely, because Weatherspoon was also out the previous game and came back in. And it just seems like it could be a good fit. I mean, it's obviously a better fit for him. He wasn't getting the playing time he wanted or thought he deserved in Columbus. So I noticed the first penalty kill, they didn't have him out on the ice at all, but then they started working him in as they took more penalties. he was starting to get more time on the penalty kill. Because that's what we're talking about with replacing Forbert. Like, we're talking about, all right, this guy might come in and be able to do some of the same things Derek Forbert could do. Well, then that means he would need to be getting some serious minutes on the PK and be solid as a penalty killer. So that we haven't really seen fully yet, because I think they were a little bit conservative with using him on the PK against Montreal.
Yeah, he only had 45 seconds there, and that might be that, you know, he might just not have had a chance to practice their PK yet. Like, he had one full team practice on Wednesday, which, you know, obviously we weren't at because we were driving up that day. But I know they do power play work every practice, but, you know, exactly how power play and penalty kill work, obviously they go against each other. But like, exactly how much, we don't really know. You know, it's like, how much were you able to get him up to speed there in one practice? So I would anticipate getting him, they'll get him more time there going forward. But yeah, Brian, I think you're right about Lauri. Like, either it's him versus Grizzly, right? Like, it feels like it's those two essentially battling to be Charlie McAvoy's D partner game one, because I also don't love Lauri in a third pairing role. You know, maybe it's because when he's been there, he's usually been with Shattenkirk, and I've kind of thought for a while, like, those two haven't really clicked. Like, they don't seem to work super well together. You know, maybe he'd work better with Peak if they ever gave that a look. But then, like you said, like, that means Weatherspoon comes out, and I don't really want that. I like the idea of the Weatherspoon Peak third pairing. Like, if they continue to play the way they did Thursday night, that's solid. Like, that's, you can absolutely win with that third pairing. Lindholm, Carlo, you feel good about. I'll save him as Lindholm for when we do ups and downs. But yeah, it, you know, before Grizzly got sick, I thought he had played a few really solid games. There were, especially against Toronto and Pittsburgh, that Grizzly McAvoy pairing had some of those, like, classic Grizzly McAvoy games where you look and it's like 70% Corsi and the Bruins have badly outshot the opponent when they were on the ice. And it's like, all right, like, they can still do that. And if they do continue to do that, then it's hard not to start the playoffs with that and see where things go. Lauri definitely has more upside than Grizzly. It's just a matter of, like, whether his all around game is going to be in a place to beat him out for game one right now. But I do think even if Lauri doesn't start the playoffs in the lineup, it's like one slip up from someone, especially from Grizzly, probably gets him in.
Yeah, because that seems like his most natural fit has been with McAvoy. Him and Shattenkirk, I agree.
I would say maybe with Carlo. Like, I think he's looked really good with Carlo, but you're not splitting up Lindholm, Carlo. That's your shutdown pair.
No, it just doesn't really work when it's him with someone else who is a little bit shaky, and Shattenkirk has been a little bit shaky, right? And Weatherspoon maybe doesn't have the skill set to pick up when Lauri makes a mistake, you know what I mean? Like, the way that McAvoy can cover flaws. So I guess the real question is, like, would you rather have Grizzly or Lauri in the lineup? And that's something that's a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer it right now if you don't want to. But it's something that they're going to have to figure out in the playoffs. And I feel like my gut tells me that they're still going to stick with Grizzly.
What would you prefer, though? I am curious what your answer to that question is. Mine's Lauri. I'll just say it.
Yeah.
I want Lauri right now over Grizzly. That's just me. And I can list off my reasons, but I don't want to take up too much time. But it's Grizzly. It's Lauri for me.
Personally, I think at this point in time, it would be Grizzly that would be more like. You go with him because he's got more experience in the play, like, just specifically because of the situation. Like, he's been in it before, Lauri hasn't. it might feel like a safer move to keep Grizzly there.
I would probably start with Grizzly there, but it would be a short leash for me. You know, Laura's a good option, so I wouldn't. We've seen Grizzly struggle in the playoffs before. If that happens again, I wouldn't just keep playing him and let him play through it. I'd go to Lori. But the reason I would start with Grizzly is because, Bridget, you mentioned, you know, McAvoy can help cover for Lori. Well, if he's playing that way where it's, you know, okay, I have to be aware of, you know, if Lori takes a chance or whatever, I think McAvoy might not play as free offensively. And I do think Grizzly allows McAvoy to do that. Like, Grizzly, those two know each other's game so well that, you know, I think McAvoy can get more involved offensively, take more chances because he trusts Grizzly to cover for him, you know, not just the other way around. So that would be my reasoning for starting there. And like I said, I think Grizzly had been playing well, which I don't want to overlook. We know he's had an inconsistent season overall, but I do think he's been better recently.
Yeah, all fair points. I would go the opposite. I would start with Lori and give him that same short leash that you would give Grizzly if he didn't play well to start. I would give Lori the opportunity. I think that whether people want to acknowledge it or not, I do think that coaches, GMs, I do think they prefer to have a little bit more size and reach on the back end. And I think that Lori, to no fault of Grizzly's, he's a bigger player, but he's also a very gifted skater and playmaker. And, you know, I think about potentially who they could be playing in the first round. And if it's Toronto, I think Lori's played really well against Toronto this year. It was his first NHL game, I think, was against Toronto potentially. So I think about, does Austin Matthews, you know, skate down the ice, looking at Grizzly and think to himself, I mean, I think I can take advantage of this player. Or does he look at Lori's size and skating ability and think it's a little bit tougher to get to inside ice with on Lori or get to the net on Lori? So again, I see the positives with Grizzly. He has been playing well. He has experience and he does make Charlie McAvoy feel very comfortable out there, which is good because McAvoy is one of your best players. I also don't think it hurts for McAvoy to kind of feel like he has to step up a little bit more and maybe be a little uncomfortable. So yeah, I think either way, it's a good option. Again, we're talking about two really good players, I think, but I would start with Lori. And if he shows he really just can't handle the moment, okay, well, here comes Matt Grizzly. So I would start aggressive and then lean back on my safety plan as opposed to the opposite. I don't know if you guys need follow-ups on that. Scott, I did want to get to your question with Jim Montgomery pregame last night in Montreal. I was going to tweet something about it, but I figured I'd wait for the podcast. And I will let you discuss in detail what was asked and what was said, and then I'll give my thoughts on it.
Yeah, so we don't know what the Bruins are going to do with their goalies. They continue to kind of dance around it, whether that's because publicly they just don't want to give anything away, which would be understandable, or because maybe they just legitimately don't know. But I do think I got Jim Montgomery to pretty much rule out one thing, and that is doing exactly what they did last year, which was, for people who might not remember, how people remember how the playoffs ended, obviously, but down the stretch in the regular season, they kept the rotation going right to the end. It was Allmark Swayman right to the final game of the regular season, and then they tried to ride Allmark for the first round. I asked Montgomery directly, like, could you do that? If you keep the rotation going to the end of the regular season, could you then ride one goalie? And here was his quote. So he kind of mentioned, like, well, you might go two games in a row with one goalie, might not be a strict rotation. But then he said, but that's something we're going to have to discuss internally. And we know if you go with a platoon the whole year, switching in and out, you can't expect one guy to ride the emotions of the playoffs by themselves. That, to me, was about as close as we've gotten to one particular plan being ruled out. So I would say if they keep the rotation going till the end of the regular season, expect them to use both goalies in the playoffs, whether it's a strict rotation, or, you know, someone gets two or three starts in a row, but probably not much more than that. And then the flip side of that is if they are thinking about riding one guy, and I think we feel like maybe Swayman has the edge, I would expect them to end the rotation soon and give someone, you know, 3, 4, 5 straight starts in the regular season to start getting them ready for that.
So, you know, that 4.5-5 hour drive up to Montreal with a couple of breweries in between was good for something, Scott, because I think this is a very interesting talking point that if Boston media is smart, they'll take it and run with it. Because it's been a polarizing topic for a couple of years, and you got a really good answer and a very transparent answer. And here's what I'll say. I've been on record the entire time that I never loved the idea of quite literally rotating goalies one game in the playoffs. And a counter argument to that would be, well, they went with the rotation all year, so go with what got them there. And that's a point that I couldn't really argue, because you're right. That is what they did the whole time. And it doesn't set up the goalies favorably to now just take the load in the playoffs. But I also didn't agree with necessarily that strategy either, but I got the point. How can you rotate all year and then give the net to one guy because they're not used to it? Because people would say you can't give them the net because they're only, both of them are only elite because of this rotation that they're doing. We haven't seen them take one guy take the net. And I understood that. I didn't agree with that philosophy because I wanted one guy to take the net for the most part, but I agreed with it. I understood it. And Jim Montgomery is saying just that. And what I took from that is that they're going to go with one guy. And if one guy struggles, they won't take very long to go to the next guy.
Yeah, but we thought the last playoffs, and they it seemed like they waited too long.
Last playoffs, there was a lot going on. There was a lot going on. You had so many injuries. Allmark was injured. Allmark wasn't. I don't, as far as last year goes, like, I can't really, my brain's numb thinking about that collapse last year. And honestly, we cannot blame necessarily the goaltending lack of rotation because for not winning the first round, because before Allmark had a chance with the puck on the stick in game 5 to fuck it up, Brad Marchand had a breakaway with a second left in regulation that could have ended everything. And we wouldn't be talking about this, but there's a lot of meat on that bone. So I'll just keep it to this year. What I'll say is this, reading between the lines, I don't think the Bruins want a situation. I don't think they're going to rotate this year because at the end of this year, because I don't think they're going to do it in the playoffs. If they're going to stop the rotation, then they're not going to do it in the playoffs, Scott, to your point. And I think that was very telling that Monty even said that, because months ago he said the opposite. And I just think that there's a lot of mental games that goes on in the playoffs. Like people in favor of the goalie rotation. And Scott, I know you've said on record, like, I'm not saying to go every other game. But if there's a situation in the playoffs where goalie A loses game 1, goalie B wins game 2, you're at game 3 and you're already at a pickle. Do you go back to the guy who lost game 1, or do you stick with the guy? And that's why it causes so much confusion, I think, in the room. It becomes a distraction to me. So
I don't know if it does, though, just like in terms of they trust, like, these guys trust both goalies. Like, the guys play out in front of them. Like, they're trusting either of them to go in. It also becomes a difficult decision. All right. If you have to choose now, after Omark had 2 great games, but Swayman has been probably more consistently the better goalie throughout the season, but they're so close, it's hard to tell. If you have to make that decision now, and one guy doesn't get used as much, starts sitting because you're trying to get somebody emotionally ready for the playoffs and give them more of a workload to get just to prepare for it. Now, what do you do when with the other guy? Like,
I think
he just sits the rest of the season or majority of the rest of the season. And like, then if you need to use him in the playoffs, how is that going to go?
Look, I think you have 14 games left. Okay. I think you give Swayman, maybe you give, if the Bruins think right now that based on the sample of the entire season so far that they like Swayman, whether it's his gamesmanship or whatever, if there's 14 games left instead of going 7-7, you know, go 10-4 or 9-5. I don't know, but like it, you got to pick a guy. I'm telling you right now, it's going to backfire. There's going to be so much second guessing if they just go into a 50-50 playoff thing. I don't see it. I think Scott said it best recently. Like, whatever goalie is playing best heading into the playoffs, you play him in the playoffs until he has a bad game or two, and then go to the other guy because you know you have two great goalies.
Well, again, but my point like all along has been there's going to be second – when you have two really good goalies, there's going to be second-guessing no matter what. And basically, unless you win it all, like unless the strategy you pick works out perfectly, there's going to be second-guessing. Last year, they tried to ride the Vezina Trophy winner, and there was a ton of second-guessing, like at multiple points during that series. So, you know, just picking a guy and like going with them, that doesn't preclude the second guessing. Like that's still going to be there if it doesn't work, right? Because then you get the same questions as last year of like, well, then when do you make the switch? Is it one bad game? Is it two? What if he has a good game, an okay game, a good game, an okay game? Like that, there's second guessing pretty much no matter what, unless the option you pick just like works almost to perfection.
But it's so much more manageable to second guess like a decision or two than it is to second guess constantly every series. Like you could potentially play what 28 games in the playoffs, like to every series be like, should they have gone with Swayman in this game or all? That's, guys, my brain would explode having to talk about this. Like just, well, like, it seriously would.
The real
I really think like we're going to be doing that anyways, though. Like that's just a product of having two high end goalies.
Yeah.
Well,
real issue is that I think that there's two people involved in making the goalie decisions and they might not agree either. So like goalie Bob is somebody that they trust to make those decisions. Montgomery might have a different opinion of what they should do, who they should play. And you know, they might butt heads about that. And last year it did kind of sound like he threw goalie Bob under the bus a little bit. So I feel like they might not see eye to eye on what they should do necessarily. And that could complicate things too.
But what makes me nervous about constantly switching up goalies in the postseason, because I completely understand like the argument. Keep them fresh. They're both really good. Like they're used to it. Like it's not going to disrupt their rhythm or whatever. But I have a hard time. Like goalies are such a interesting creature. Like if Swayman goes out there or Ullmark, if one of them goes out there and has like a 50 plus save performance and he's just feeling good about himself. And Scott, I know this is not what you were saying. You in your world, you would stick with that guy at the following game, but a lot of people are saying like, no, rotate him. And I can't get on board with that because if a goalie gets hot, he gets hot, and you can't get hot if you're literally, you know, every couple games sitting on the bench. I don't love it. One thing I just want to clarify is Bridget, you brought up last year. I thought Ullmark was, he had a crucial mistake in game 5 in overtime along with Matt Grizzlick. And he was not great in game 6, obviously, but I don't want to make the mistake of letting the team off the hook because they were up 3-1 and goaltending, their team defense was terrible in the back half of that series.
It was, but you know, Ullmark also had a kind of a subpar, pretty rough game 2. And that, you know, like I remember after that, I think I would have started Swayman game 3 just because like I wanted, you know, to use both. I was pro rotation and still would be if they're both playing well down the stretch this season, I would still be in favor of it.
For the record, I wanted Swayman game 6 too last year. Just so I'm not. Yeah,
that's
the
easiest second guess was not making the switch after.
But it goes to show that like I'm also not just like one guy only. Like I was willing last year to give it to Swayman. I wanted Swayman in game 6 and 7 because game 7 alone is that's a tough ask. So yeah. I'm more in the middle ground than I probably sound sometimes, but I don't mean to derail you.
Yeah, but you know, but again, then like Allmark had good game 3, good game 4. And it's like, well, you can't switch then. So, yeah, but one thing I wanted to highlight, though, just the Bruins' schedule the rest of the way is a little bit funky. Like, there's a couple back-to-backs. There's a couple long 3, even 4-day break at one point. Like, and I don't think either of those are really conducive to riding a guy. Like, you don't really have back-to-backs in the playoffs. They don't like playing goalies back-to-back nights anyways. If you have 2 days off between games, that doesn't really mimic playoffs. So I would highlight two stretches of, all right, if you're going to give someone 3 games in a row, here's where you do it. And one of them is next week, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Ottawa, Thursday, Rangers, Saturday at Philly. Like there's a 3-game stretch that mimics a playoff schedule, you know, not talking about the opponents, but just every other night. Actually, Saturday is even an afternoon game, which, by the way, you get some of those in the playoffs. So that would be one of them. And then first week of March at Nashville Tuesday, at Carolina Thursday versus Florida Saturday afternoon in Boston. Like those are the two stretches I would look at and be like, all right, if someone's getting 3 straight starts and you want to and you're doing that as playoff prep, those are the two stretches where it makes sense. So very interested to see if they do that next week. I got to say, like, my gut still tells me that they're not going to break the rotation just yet, but we'll see. I mean, they've said they might, so, you know, if they don't do it next week, then I think you kind of only have one other opportunity to mimic a playoff-type schedule.
So
Ryan, you muted yourself.
But... Yeah, you muted yourself. Do you want to get do you want to get to the who's up, who's down real quick? We've gone long, but
that's what I was saying to myself, apparently.
I mean we've already touched on some of them. Like Allmark's up. That's 2 really good games since the deadline. Pavel Zak has been putting up points. Jake DeBrusk we touched on. I wanted to highlight Hampus Lindholm. You know, I don't know if you guys wanted to specifically highlight any of those others, but I think Hampus Lindholm has played really well since he's come back to the lineup from injury. On Thursday, he makes a great play in overtime to win the puck back and start that rush that ends up that ends with DeBrusk's game winner. You know, he won a one-on-one battle down low in the defensive zone to get that going, and I just think he's played really solid. And, you know, especially that first game back against, I think that was Pittsburgh, right? He had a ton of jump, maybe a little quieter second game, but then I thought really solid again Thursday in Montreal.
Yeah, I think he's up. I think you noticed that you missed Lindholm. And we talked about how Allmark has been up since the trade deadline. There have been a few that are down, like JVR. We were saying he's sick. That's why he missed the Montreal game. And I don't know how long he's been dealing with it, but he didn't like his last stretch of a few games. He wasn't very productive, was kind of not noticeable out there.
He's got 1 point in his last 12 games.
Yeah. So he wasn't making a huge impact and he's maybe it was because he was sick. You know, we don't know exactly what he was dealing with, but he needs to reach, you know, what he was doing earlier in the season when he was, you know, impactful on the power play in front of the net, and when he was making things happen on the third line. And you know, is it chemistry? Is it what is it like that he's not seeing right now? I mean, Frederick and him and Geeky have played together quite a bit, so feel like that like chemistry shouldn't be an issue at this point, but maybe that's not a great fit for him for whatever reason, or maybe he's just having a tough stretch here and he'll come out of it. But He's definitely been a down, and I don't mean to pick on him because he's sick or anything like that. And he's also about to have his 1,000th game ceremony. He already played in his 1,000th game, but he's going to have the ceremony Saturday. So,
yeah, I think, you know, Trent Frederick is another player who has been just a little bit down. I don't think he's playing poorly, but I think he has maybe 6 points since the All-Star break, which is dating back about a month at this point. Again, this is not a crazy down. Just he's somebody who pre-All-Star break was kind of scoring on a career high clip and was feeling really confident offensively. And he had a really, really great goal against Toronto recently where he stripped William Nylander of the puck and went down and scored a goal to put the Bruins up 2-0. But just seems like his production has been down a little bit. So he's going to be noted here. And Scott, you mentioned Charlie McAvoy also kind of pointless in his last 6 games, maybe, but outside of that, how has he been playing? Do you think?
Yeah, I think I'd put both Charlies in kind of the same category where, like, I don't think they're playing poorly at all. I think they're still playing well, but McAvoy 0 points, last 6 games, Coyle 1 point in the last 5. So just offensively they're down. Like, obviously you need more production than that from those two guys, but I don't think like their whole game has fallen off anything. I think they've mostly still been playing pretty well.
And I think Zacha has been an up. We talked a little bit about him, but he was last week. He was the second star of the week in the NHL. Like he's been scoring. And that line that we talked about, Heinen, Zacha, Pasta, has been a good line. It's been a productive line. Heinen, you could also say, is an up. So I think Zacha came to mind right away when we were talking, as well as DeBrusk, for who's out this week.
All right. So that probably wraps up for this episode. I do want to mention quickly the Bruins play the Flyers, I think, in Boston on the 16th, which that reminds me of being, I think it was a 2007-2008 season, the year the Bruins made the playoffs for the first time in a couple of years. It was the first year under Claude. The Bruins played the Flyers in Boston on I think it was a St. Patrick's Day matinee, because I remember there were all green hats in the audience, and it was a game where I think Aaron Ward scored like a goal in overtime, and it was just, I remember the game because it was one of the first times in a couple of years that the Garden was sold out, and it was kind of leading into that playoff run, and the Garden was sold out because people were catching wind that the Bruins were about to make the playoffs potentially, and it was kind of the start of the last, you know, almost 20 years of this Bruins run. And I don't know if you remember that, but it was against the Flyers. So seeing the Flyers in town on St. Patrick's Day weekend is kind of reminded me of that game.
I do. I like vaguely remember that. I don't remember all the details. Like you probably do, but I do know what you're talking about. Yeah. Philly feels like a good St. Patrick's Day opponent too. Like, you know, another team, another city with a lot of Irish heritage. I'm a little bummed it didn't line up that, you know, Bruins were up here in Montreal through the whole weekend, because Montreal also goes hard in St. Patrick's Day. It's a big deal up here. I know, you know, people think of it as French Canadian, which obviously it is, but there are a lot of Irish up here and there's a lot of Irish bars and pubs. So I think we had a good time Wednesday and Thursday, but I think people are going to be having a really good time Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, maybe it's for the best that we're not here for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would be crowded and Scott would be, you know, we don't know. I don't want to have to scrape Mr. McLaughlin off the bar floor somewhere. And I know I promised to post on the Skate Pod Twitter account all of the updates of what we were doing, but then I decided probably posting a bunch of pictures of us drinking is a great idea to put on the work account. But I took the pictures. I have the pictures. I just maybe beer towers shouldn't go on our work Twitter, but you know.
It's like the opening to the end credits to The Hangover or something like that. It's just all these crazy night in the town. End,
yeah. Where all the pictures come back. Yeah, that's a good idea. If I had more time, I would edit them right into this section right here.
And then, so you guys will be on Sunday, but actually St. Patrick's Day, you'll be on Sunday Skate in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yep. 9 to 11 a.m.
Don't go too hard on Saturday night so that you're awake Sunday morning.
All right.
Saturday night's a work night, so I'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, guys, we could probably sign off. So thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful weekend and a fun St. Patrick's Day. And we'll talk to you on Monday.